ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः। हरिः ॐ। Hope all of you had a good Thanksgiving. We had left off on verse number 10 of chapter 7, the last time we had class a couple of weeks ago. Bijam mam sarva bhutanam viddhi partha sanatanam. What is going on right now is Bhagwan is explaining where he can be found in the things that we actually physically see. And the idea is, this is known, I told you, as Drishtanta Purnima. Drishtanta means examples he's giving as to where, how we should look for him in things. So it's not really necessary to go to a Tirthyatra or a temple or anything. Look for me in your day-to-day things. And therefore he started with water, something that we drink whole day long, 24/7, something without which we cannot live. And he said he is the sapidity in water. The sun and the moon, which we see every single day, says, I am the light in that, in the sun and the moon. I am the Om in the Vedas, because he said, and Om we chant before every mantra, we chant Om. So all these common things that we see every day, he is trying to turn our attention towards him. What is happening is we are getting caught in the thing itself. We look at the moon and we say, oh, what a beautiful moon. I mean, just yesterday, now, you know, it's waxing, the moon right now, right? It's going to go. And you say, oh, beautiful moon, how nice the, you know, the curve looks and all that. And then we forget to see that the light in that moon is because of the Lord. We forget. It's very natural. So that is what he's trying to do, is shift our attention. Vedanta is only a shift of attention. That's it. It's not going anywhere, doing anything, being anything, becoming something. That is not Vedanta. Vedanta is only a shift of vision. And that's the vision that he's trying to give us here. So he started off with water, then Shashi Surya, so moon and sun, and Om, and Shabdakhe, the space, the silence in the space. We are so caught up in the words that we miss the substratum of the words, which is silence itself, which he says, that is what I am. I'm not the words. I am that because of which the words can be heard, the words can be spoken. So if we keep on shifting our attention like this, then it'll be easy for us to actually see God. Paurusham Nushu, I told you, it is that because of which humans are humans. Okay? Because we have the discriminative intellect. That is why we are humans and not animals. The sweet smell in the earth. So that is, smell is the, fragrance is the essence of earth. Tejas chasmi vibhavasau, the teja in the fire, the heat in the fire, the light in the fire. Fire is not me, but because of which fire is fire, that is what I am. Jivanam sarva, this life force that I see, because of which I can act, because of which I can speak, because of which I smell, I touch, I say, I know, that because of which all this is happening, I am. We are getting caught in things that I know, what I speak, what I hear, who I speak to. We are caught in all this. So he's saying, shift, 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 shift your attention. Tapaschasmi, tapas tapasvishu. In the tapasvis, in the people who are doing penance, I am that strength of penance. And then we were on verse 10 saying, Bijam mam sarva bhutanam. He says, I am the seed of all beings, but then he has qualified it with the word sanatanam, eternal, which means that if we take it to be literally to be he to be the seed, then that doesn't work because the seed always gets destroyed to give rise to the effect. So what he is meaning here is the potentiality in the seed to sprout. That potentiality never gets destroyed. The seed gets destroyed, but then it has that potentiality has been transferred into another seed in the fruit. So that power to sprout is getting transferred. The seed is getting destroyed. Don't look at the seed. That is not what I am. I am that potentiality of the seed. That is what he means. Buddhir buddhi matamasmi. We saw this. The intelligence in the intellect. I'm not the intellect itself, but the intelligence. And the intelligence has got two, three different aspects to it. One aspect is the talent that people have. I told you, we all have vocal cords. We all can speak. But then only some of us can sing very well. Not all can sing. Not all can really have the power of speech. You know, some people, they can tell jokes in such a nice manner or tell stories in such a nice manner. Not everybody has that power to express. So that talent, because everybody's got the same vocal cords. They're made of the whole body. Everybody's whole body is made of the same material. Now, how come some bodies are weak? Some bodies are strong. So there is a difference even then. So the talent, he says, that is what he says, buddhir buddhi madhamasmi. And the other aspect of this intelligence is the discriminative faculty. See, intelligence, the gross intelligence is, yeah, that is in the external world. What are the mutual funds doing? What is, you know, what is the politics? How is the economy of a country? That is all gross intellect. So that is not the intellect. That intelligence also is him, but the main thing is the discriminative faculty. And discriminative faculty, I told you in Vedanta, it is the sat asat vivek, because in Tattva Bodh we saw the highest definition of viveka given as sat asat vivek. In this sat asat vivek also, we go a little bit deeper. Basically, the translation is distinction or discrimination between real and unreal. But you must also go a little bit deeper and think, does the unreal even exist? This is going a bit deeper. Okay, superficially, we can leave it at that. Okay, real and unreal. World is unreal and substratum is real. But really, the unreal, whether it is really existing, it is not. So can there be a distinction between something which is existing and something which is not? It's not there. So what is the distinction? So the distinction, the discrimination is to understand that I am that real thing and there is really nothing else. So the discrimination between sat and asat in its deeper meaning is to just understand that there is only sat. What is that sat? I am that sat and there is really nothing known as asat. That is the Vedantic meaning. Buddhir buddhi matamasmi. I am that intelligence. From the Sankhya school of philosophy, they do the seer seen discrimination, Purusha Prakriti. So that there is a seer and there is a seen. Now understand the difference. In Vedanta, they're doing sat asat, which is referring to the existence principle. Sat Chit Ananda. Remember, God is Sat Chit Ananda. So this Sat Asat Vivek falls under the existence. And the seer seen discrimination falls under consciousness. So there is a seer. There is only one seer who is sentient and everything else is seen. Whatever is seen is changing. Whatever is changing is perishing. Whatever is perishing is Asat and whatever is Asat is Mithya. So for Mithya, understand that Mithya word can be used only for something which is seen and can be negated. You cannot use the word mithya for horns on a rabbit. You cannot use the word because it is false. It never existed. Nobody ever saw the horns on the rabbit. So that mithya word cannot be used. But mithya can be used for the snake on the rope, for the mirage waters on the sand, because at some point in time, somebody experienced it, and then at a later point, it vanished. So that is what mithya is. So to understand that there is only one seer and that everything else is mithya, whatever I see, I do see it, but it does get negated at some point. Because this is all in the head. Gets negated means nothing like the world is going to disappear from my eyes, but in my mind, I should know that this is not real. Now, the question also arises, then is there one existence and is there a consciousness? No, existence and consciousness are one and the same. If we say they are different, then there'll be an existence without consciousness, without being aware. So it is inert existence and the consciousness will be not even existing because no existence, only consciousness. So consciousness and existence must not be taken as two different ones, only one. Okay, because they cannot be separated. And our experience is that not only that I exist, but I also know that I'm existing at the same time. And see, right now, I'm speaking. I'm also aware of the fact that I'm speaking. And I'm also aware of the fact of what I'm speaking. But even mainly, I know that I'm speaking. It's not like I don't know what I'm doing. I'm speaking and you're listening and you, at one point, you are also aware at the same time that you're listening. From the bhakti standpoint, it is the Ananda Mimamsa. Satchit Ananda. Ananda Mimamsa is to understand, to discriminate that there is no happiness in the objects, because I think at this stage, excuse me, that happiness is in objects. So Vishayananda is there. Happiness is in experiencing. Vasnananda it is called. Like I see a movie, I hear some good music, I like it, I enjoy it. So there's not that I'm possessing any object, but only through my senses I'm enjoying. So that is also something which gives us happiness. And then people give us happiness as well. Okay, but the discrimination there is to be applied is that I'm associating, I'm giving credit for this happiness to these external objects. No, all the happiness that I experience is only because of the self. So that is Ananda. That is the discrimination that we must have. We can feel happy, not that we don't feel happy. If I see a good movie, of course I feel happy. If I hear good music, I feel happy. But in my mind, I must not assign that happiness to the movie. I must not. So what if, see, when I assign it to an outside object, then I become dependent, because I'm saying that this happiness is dependent on this object, situation or person. Then when that object, situation and person is not there, I become unhappy. So don't think that Vedanta, you know, Vairagya is, oh, no, I don't want to go for them. I don't want to enjoy this. Not like that. You can enjoy, but don't have this erroneous notion that your happiness is because of something external. That is Ananda Mimamsa. So this is the Viveka Shakti, which Bhagwan is talking about in Buddhir Buddhi Matamasmi. We had covered portion up to here. Tejas Tejas Vina Maham. So this is the Teja. Teja Bhagwan Shankaracharya has translated as Pragalbhya. Pragalbhya means, I'll start with an example, which will make it easy. If we take the case of our own Guruji, Puja Swami Tejamayananji, he had completed his BSc, he had taken admission for his master's, and by his own admission, he said, I just took admission for master's because I never knew what else to do. I didn't know what to do. Fine. So he was waiting to start his college, new year and all that. And then there was an announcement that this Swami, means Puja Gurudev, was going to be speaking. He took a bus. It took him 2-3 hours to get to that place. And the hall was full. The lecture had already started. It was chapter 3 that was going on. And he went and he heard Gurudev. And in that 1 hour or 1.5 hour that he heard, his entire life changed. Because he came home and he exactly had the idea now. Because he said, I took admission to MSc because I didn't know what else was there. When he heard Gurudev, he gave up MSc, he gave up everything. He just gave up his own home and he went off to Sandipani, because that changed the course of his life. So Tejas Tejas Vinamaham, this Tej means that brilliance which can change somebody else's life. So Gurudev had that. That's why we see so many Swamijis who have come in contact with Gurudev, life changed. Come in contact, life changed. Life changed. So that power, that ability, that tej, that brilliance, that when the person speaks, the other person is so impressed and the whole course of that person's life is now changed. That is what this is referring to. Tejas, in among the Tejasvi, among the brilliant people, I am that brilliance, because of which is that brilliance which is capable of changing the course of somebody else's life. My own life I can change. That is okay. I make a decision and I change one thing. But to change somebody else's life for the better is something. So this is what this means. Okay. Tejas Vinamaham. All right, we'll move on to the next one now. Balam balavatam asmi kamaraga vivarjitam dharma viruddho bhuteshu kamosmi bharatarshabha. Of the strong, I am the strength, devoid of desire and attachment, and in all beings, I am the desire, unopposed to dharma, O best among the Bharatas. So, balam balavatam asmi, this is a very important verse. Kama raga means I am the strength in the strong. See, in Bhagavad Puran, there is a story everybody knows, Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad. Prahlad was a great devotee of Bhagavan Vishnu. And Hiranyakashipu was a great devotee of himself because he declared himself to be God and he wanted everybody to. So he had actually replaced Bhagavan Vishnu's idols with his own idols in the temple. That's what he had done. He said, I am God and everybody should pray to me. And that's why because he had the boon that nobody could kill him. They couldn't kill him in the day and the night and the middle of the day, and man couldn't kill him, animal couldn't kill him, in all kinds of conditions he had. But Prahlad always believed in. The school in which Prahlad was sent to be taught, the teachers were told by Hiranyakashipu to teach the students that Hiranyakashipu is the only God. no mention of Vishnu. He is the God. So Prahlad used to actually, in the lunch hour, have his own satsang, and he would tell the other children, that's not true. It's Vishnu who is God. My father is not God. So anyway, so then Hiranyakashipu got really angry because when Prahlad came in holidays, this father asked him, what did you learn? He said, I learned that Lord Narayan is Lord. He said, how can that be possible? Because I have taught the teachers not to teach this. So he called the teachers, he said, what are you teaching my son? He says, no, we have not taught this. He himself is doing it. So then Hiranyakashipu started attempting to kill Prahlad, right? He threw him off the cliff. He threw him into the fire. He did all kinds of things. But without any fear, Om Namo Narayanaya, and Prahlad would just go into the fire, fall off the cliff, and nothing happened to him. So then Hiranyakashipu asks him, he says, what is it because of which you have that strength, that fearlessness? Because fearlessness itself is strength. Fear is a weakness. Any kind of fear that we have is a weakness. So if you're fearless about something, remember, that is a strength. So the father asks, so Prahlad says, the same divinity which is making you cruel, that same divinity is giving me the fearlessness. Means what? In you and me, there is only one God, and that is Bhagavan Vishnu. So that does that mean that cruelty is God? No, that is not what it means. Because here again, the strength in the strong, which is devoid, he has qualified it again. Kama and raga, kama desire, raga attachment. Desire is something that we have for things which we don't possess, which we already don't have. I don't have a house, I don't have a spouse, I don't have a child. Then I have desire for those objects. Raga is attachment for objects that I already possess. So now I have a house. Oh my God, or what if something happens to the house? What if somebody steals my things? What if somebody steals my... So I have the thing and I'm afraid of losing it. That is attachment. I don't have a thing and I want that thing. That is desire. Both desire and attachment give rise to fear. Because when I have a strong desire for something, then I'm afraid that it may not get fulfilled. I may not get that object. I may not get to travel. I may not get to go there. I may not get to do this. Something that I want to do very badly. So there is fear. In attachment also, there is fear. I will lose this. Will I lose this? Will this go away from me? So there is always fear. So when there is desire and attachment for selfish reasons, there will be fear. There can never be strength. Fear, I told you already, is a weakness. Okay. So that's why this balam balavatam asmi, kamaraga, that's why he's qualifying it with kama, means there should not, the strength in the strong who do not have personal agenda, personal desires, personal attachments. See, I was reading this verse and then the thought of people like Mahatma Gandhi, Bhagat Singh, Lokmanya Tilak, Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King. I thought, did they have desire? Did they not have desire? Did they not have attachment? But their desire was for what? Was it for their own personal gain or was it for the entire country? Their whole people, they should be freed, right? So then that strength is desireless strength. And that he says, I am. Balam balam. They had strength. I was recalling, I don't know how many of you know, Mahatma Gandhi went to he was called to the round table conference by King George, this Queen Elizabeth's father. And he went in his attire, which is just dhoti, no shirt, just the, you know, and they told him there that you cannot attend the conference without a suit. You have to be fully suited, booted, right? Because it's all the knights will be there, all the dignitaries will be there, the king will be there, you cannot go. And Mahatma Gandhi said, this is all my people can afford. If I'm going to meet the king, I will meet him only in the attire which my people can afford. Look at the fearless. He had traveled like 3 months, God knows, 3 months, 4 months on the boat. There was no plane. And he, so much money also would have been spent. He was not worried about money. But he didn't, oh my God, I traveled so much. Now I don't get to meet the king. What should I do? Should I wear a suit? No questions in his mind. He said, absolutely not. Either the king meets me like this or I'm going back. Fearlessness, because there is no personal agenda. When we don't have a personal agenda, we will not have fear. When you're working for somebody else, for a higher altar, okay, not for anything low, for anything higher, you will not have fear. And the king agreed to see him. He attended the round table conference in that half attire, because only dhoti, no shirt, cotton, homemade, right? Yet the king, so the king got scared. King of England was scared. The whole British police actually was protecting Mahatma Gandhi. They were so afraid. They said, if something happens to him, the whole nation will burn. So he didn't have any fear. He was walking without protection, but they were providing him protection that nobody would kill him. That is how his life was. That strength, I am. This is what Bhagwan is saying. Because it is devoid of karma and raga. One story, this is not a story, this is a real thing. It happened many, many, many years ago in a village near Indore. There was an old lady and she had her two little grandchildren with her in her little house, whatever. And she heard a tiger in the front yard or back of the house. Because in those days, you know, there used to be a lot of jungle and all, and these tigers were roaming around. So it is said that this is true. Huh? My husband had told me this. So she was 80 years old. She was only like yay big, you know, at 80, what strength she would have. Because she thought that he would hurt her grandchildren. She had two little kids with her. She took her stick and she went out and she just went on beating. It was dark. She just went on beating the tiger and he died. And then in the morning when they came, he was 12 foot long and so strong. She didn't even know. 80-year-old woman. That strength I am. This is what he's saying here. Balam balam. It means physically that woman was not strong. It is not that physically strong who is and that strength I am. No. See, there are two types of strength. One is, suppose if I pick up a stone or I pick up something to hit somebody. Then one strength is to pick up that thing. The other strength is coming from the mind, right? I want to hurt this person. That strength is coming from the mind. So that strength, which is not now this strength which I'm, if I pick up the stone to hurt somebody and I want to hurl that stone at someone, that strength I am not. That is Hiranyakashipu's strength. Like he was cruel. His own son he was trying to kill. Not that strength. But the strength which Prahlad had, he didn't have even desire for his life. Right? Because when he was being thrown off the cliff, do you think he was old enough to know that I'm probably going to die? He's like, okay, fine. Om Namo Narayanaya. So that strength I am. Balam balavatam asmi kama raga vivarjitam. This kama raga vivarjitam is very important. Okay. So this desire and attachment, which is without any fear. If it is for personal gain, there will be fear, and then that is no strength at all. So Bhagwan is not referring to that. Bhagwan is referring to this other kind of strength, which does not have a personal agenda. Personal, something I want to get name and fame and glory and all, not that sort of thing. Okay, please understand this. Dharma viruddho bhuteshu kamosmi bharatarshava. So, kama, again, the word is there. Kamaha asmi bharatarshava, best among the bharatakula. That is, the last word is referring to Arjun. So, I am that desire which is not against dharma. So there are two kinds of desires. One is with dharma, in accordance with dharma. One is not in accordance with dharma. So if we see, we have desire to eat also, right? We are hungry, we want to eat, we want to have a roof over our head. Anything for the maintenance of the body, that is not the desire, that is not against dharma. Let's put it that way. Okay. We have been given this body. We have this body. The body needs to be maintained. And for the maintenance of it, whatever is to be eaten, whatever is to be drunk, whatever is to be done, should be done. And that is then within the parameters of dharma. You know, there are certain desires that we have which fall within our periphery of dharma. We can do. Like, okay, I want to see a movie. That's fine. Okay, not that is not dharma viruddha. But when you start getting greedy, so you have, when you're eating because you're bored. Just yesterday I was talking to somebody, you know, you just sitting like, oh, what should I eat now? That the body doesn't need. What is the need? And if it is done, that is within dharma. If it is not needed, but you're still doing it, and we do a lot of things which are really not needed, that is against. For a sannyasis, like, see, they will go for bhiksha. They've been asked to go for bhiksha previously, though it was very strict. But anyway, when they go for bhiksha, bhikshan dehi means whatever you have, you give me. Not like, you know, I like this, so give me that. And previously, the bhikshus, the sannyasis, suppose if they went to, they were supposed to go to only 5 houses per day, and those houses had to be always different. Because the reason is that they were not allowed to pick and choose just any 5 houses. And the reason is that suppose if they go to a house and maybe there is the lady of the house is very generous. She's very rich. So she'll give them good food, plenty of food, right? It doesn't mean that they should go there again and again. That way it was. So if they start demanding that I want this food, I like this, I don't like this, then it becomes dharma viruddha. Okay, but they are within dharma when they're going for bhiksha, they're asking for bhiksha, and whatever they get, they're eating, then that is within dharma. So this is what he says here. Yeah. Okay. So that, because of which life has to be maintained, this body has been given to us. It is our duty to maintain it. And if we do whatever that is to be done, it is done. If we were to give the example of electricity is used for many, many good things. But if electricity is used for electrocuting somebody or hurting somebody, then that is not the balam balamatavasmas. All right. So this is a very important verse. So he's the strength in the strong, but the strength is the mental strength, which is devoid of personal agenda. All right. Okay. All right. So here ends the Drishtant Purnima. Okay. So we started off with verse 8, 8 to 11. These are the 15 examples that he has given, where he has explained everything. Okay. Clear? So idea is, look for me in your day-to-day thing, day-to-day affairs. Look for me. That is the idea. Now he gives a concluding verse that is also very important. Verse 12. Ye chaiva sattvika bhavaha rajasastamasaschaye matta eveti tan viddi natvaham teshu temai. Whatever beings and objects that are pure, active and inert, know them to proceed from me. Yet I am not in them, they are in me. So when he talks about beings and objects, and we have talked about this many times, but we'll talk about it again. Rajas, pure, active, sattvika, ye chaiva sattvika is there, rajas is there, and tamas is there. So what he's saying is that you see the expression of these three things in the world. We see it. We see sattva, we see purity, we see quietness, we see calmness, we see knowledge, we see activity, dynamism, rajas, lot of activity, and then we also see inertness. So what he's saying, and the entire world is only a play of these three gunas. Unless all three of them are present, action cannot happen. Okay, so the entire world is, and you'll see that world is also made up of inert things, tamas. Okay, world, you see dynamism in animals. Some animals are, you know, they can't even, horses and dogs, they're constantly moving. Humans also, constantly, what should I do next? What should I do next? What should I do next? So we see that also. We see quietness, calmness, purity in certain people. All these, he says, have come from me alone. I am the originator of these three, which means what? Whatever that you see in this world has come from me. Because whatever is seen in the world is a play of the three gunas. And when he says the three gunas have come from me, that means this entire world has come from me. All right? Ye chaiva sattvika bhava rajasa. We see these. We have talked about this in chapter 3, but we see these in animals, we see these three gunas in plants, and we see definitely see them in humans. Is that clear? Plants, you know, a tulsi is considered as a sattvic plant. Anything which is very fragrant, the fragrant flowers, you know, Rajani, Gandha and all those which tickle the senses, they're rajas. And things like marijuana and pot and all that becomes tamas, which will make you, you know, your mind becomes dull, because of which your mind becomes dull. That is tamas. In animals, we see cow is sattvic, horse and dog are considered rajasic, elephant and pig, they're considered tamasic, and humans. Okay. There is dravya, there is matter, there is kriya, there is activity, and then there is knowledge. So this dravya is tamas, kriya, activity is rajas, and knowledge is sattva, these three. Matta eveti tan viddi, yes. Know them to proceed from me. Know them to have come from me. But natvam teshu temai, but understand that they are in me, I am not in them. Okay, now this part has to be understood correctly. So if you take the example of electricity and this computer here, what is being said is, electricity is saying, computer is in me, I am not in the computer, which means that the computer cannot function or exist without me, but I am happily existing without the computer. So there is a dependency. The computer is dependent on the electricity, but the electricity is not dependent on the computer. If I unplug the computer will not be able to work, but the electricity, nothing is going to happen to electricity. It is going to stay happily there. Okay. So this dependency is the first meaning of that. They are in me. I am not in them. I am not dependent on them. The second aspect of this is, when we see sattva, rajas and tamas, or if you take the example of the computer, see, one person may be using, we are using the computer to do a satsang. Somebody else might be doing it to hack some other sites. Right? Electricity is the same. Same electricity is providing electricity to us. Same electricity is providing electricity to the hackers. But what electricity is saying here is, because of the satsang, I am not getting any merit. Because of the hacking, I am not getting any demerit. You understand? So what people do, the three gunas have come from me. What people do with that doesn't affect me. Or if a person, so there is a person who is very sattvic, so maybe he's very knowledgeable, that doesn't mean that my knowledge is going to increase or is increasing. Person is sattvic. Okay, sattva has come from me, no doubt. And because of that predominance of sattva in that person is very pure, very quiet, very calm, very knowledgeable. That doesn't mean that I am pure, I am becoming pure and calm and knowledgeable. Okay, person is very dynamic. The rajas has come from me. Yes, I have provided it. And the person, because of that, is very dynamic. Doesn't mean that I am becoming dynamic. Inertness, person is procrastinating, lazy, doesn't want to work, etc., etc. That doesn't mean that I become lazy. So I do not get affected by whatever effects these three gunas are having on the people. So the like I said, the computer can be used for satsang, can be used for doing something good, can be, somebody may be using it to apply for a job, and somebody may be using it to con somebody. You know how many computer frauds are there now, right? We're getting emails, you want this, you want that, etc. So what people are doing with that computer doesn't concern electricity. Electricity is only, its job is to provide power. It is providing power. Electricity is not getting affected by whatever. So that is what is meant here when he says, they are dependent on me. I am not dependent on them. They cannot function without me. I can remain without them. Whatever functionality that they have and whatever they become because of the three gunas, that does not affect me either. I do not become knowledgeable. I do not become dynamic. I do not become lazy and sleepy and procrastinating because somebody has become like that because of the three gunas, even though the gunas proceed from me, which means that I control the gunas and therefore they do. See, how do we get affected? That, see, with a situation, suppose I get affected, I can get affected because of situations around me, right? Things happening around me. People around me, they can also upset me. So the idea is I get upset if I have a connection with them. If, what should I say? I will get affected. If I get affected, that means they have a power over me. You get it? Somebody says something to me, that means they have that much power that to disturb me. See, some third person says something, you know, we don't even worry. But if our own child says something, then we get affected. So I get affected if it's too hot or too cold or too rainy or too snowy. That means that that situation has the power on me. And this is what he means when he says they are not in me, means they do not have any power on me. I have power over them. When I am powerful, when I am strong, nothing can affect me. Gurudev's example of the lighthouse. There is the lighthouse where the waves are lashing on the lighthouse. Nothing is happening to the lighthouse. But if it was a log of wood, it would be going up and down. So the lighthouse is not in the waves, right? Because the lighthouse is not dependent on the waves. Waves may be calm, lighthouse is okay, same. And the waves may be lashing against the lighthouse will remain the same. So the lighthouse is not depending on that water, on the waves. So the waves are not in me, he says. Of course, they are in me doesn't work, but I'm just giving you an example. So the three gunas are proceeding from me. They cannot exist without me. I can exist without them. Whatever effects that they're giving out, those effects do not affect me either. I do not become knowledgeable or dynamic or this. And I control them because I control them. And in our case, we are controlled by the gunas. Therefore, we feel, we feel sad and unhappy when things, when we, you know, expression of tamas is, see, when I think this dependency, what is dependency? We must understand. Dependency is, when do I say I'm dependent on something? When the presence or absence of that thing affects me, then I'm dependent. You understand? If I'm unhappy, if the sun is not there, then I'm dependent on the sun for my happiness. S-U-N. Okay? So, when I feel that without this particular object, I am incomplete, right? My life is incomplete. If I don't possess this, it's an expression of tamas. When I think that I need to have power and position. If we actually go to chapter 1, we need not go anywhere. That's why Gita has got everything. In chapter 1, this is what we actually had discussed in detail. When we look at Dhritarashtra, Dhritarashtra was attached to the crown and the throne. If you remember, the blind king was so attached to the crown and to the this thing. That was an expression of tamas. Because inert objects, he was attached to inert. He just wanted to stay on the throne. And for that, he was very, very unfair to the Pandavas. That is tamasic attachment. That is a dependency arising out of tamas. For objects, he did it. He did it for the throne and the crown. Duryodhan was not worried about sitting on the throne, as long as he had the power, because he was doing whatever that he wanted and his father was not saying anything. The king was not saying anything. Dhritarashtra alone could have avoided the war. He could have asserted his authority. Then it would have been Kamaraga Vibarjitam. See, Balam Balavatamasmi Kamaraga Vibarjitam, in the case of Dhritarashtra, it was not Kama and Raga Vibarjitam. It was not devoid of desire and attachment. He had the desire for the crown and he was attached to his son. And because of that, he did so much injustice to the Pandavas. So that is an expression of tamas. Duryodhan is an expression of rajas, because he didn't care. If he didn't have the throne, he didn't have the throne, as long as he has the power. He was doing anything that he wanted. And he knew that his father would not say anything. And Arjun was attached to the people. So it was his sattvic attachment. So that's why it says sattva also binds. And sattva is the hardest to overcome. So all three were dependencies. Why was Arjun's dependency? Because when there were all other kinds of grandfathers who were standing in front of him, he had won all the wars. He killed everybody. He had no regret. But when his own grandfather came, he fell. Understand? So there it didn't become, previously it was Kamaraga Vibarjitam, because it didn't matter. But here he got it. That attachment comes from sattva. People, attachment to people. That's why we see so many doctors not operating on their own children. They never operate on their own children. Why? That is what it is. They say, no, my child, no. They would have done the same surgery hundreds of times. But it's somebody else's child. That's okay. But when it's my own child, I cannot do it. So this dependency that we have on the gunas, that Bhagwan doesn't have. That is what is meant by control. Control means not that you keep somebody in our own mind, we have to control. And the way we can control our mind is by controlling the gunas. When we go reach chapter 14, there Bhagwan will say, the one who has controlled the gunas is realized, is as good as realized. Gunatita Purusha is realized. If you have really controlled the senses, the gunas, because Bhagwan is above the gunas. So if you also are able to control the gunas, you are like Bhagwan only then. We can't. We feel sleepy, then in the morning we can't get up, even if we have to go somewhere. That's why going against the gunas is purushartha. Going against the gunas means, okay, now if you're feeling satvik and if you feel like reading, you don't go against that particular one. But when you feel, oh, let me sleep in, why should I go up for to the class? Should I go to the class? So those type of things have to be overcome. All right? Tadviddhi. Now, one more understanding that we can get from this is, from the three gunas, this is one interpretation. Sattva represents waking state. Rajas represents dream state. And tamas obviously is deep sleep state. So when he says that these three gunas have come from me, it can also be interpreted that the waking, dream and deep sleeps have come from him, but he is beyond the guna. Then in the next line, he says, they are not in me. So I am beyond the waking, dream and deep sleep states. I am that Turiya. I am that fourth state. There's also, this is one interpretation. Okay, that way also it can be interpreted. Because in the gunas, if you want to compare them to waking, dream and deep sleep, then waking is sattva, dream is rajas, and deep sleep is tamas. That is we know that, right? So that's why he says whoever is contemplative and all that, this thing. Okay. Now, another thing we must understand here is, so in general, what he's saying is that these three are supported by me. They have come from me, but I am not dependent on them. So is there some sort of a relation? We have to understand, is there a relation between the gunas and Bhagwan? We'll start with an example. We can take snake and rope. Okay, let's do our usual. So there is a snake and there is a rope, and I'm afraid of the snake because I'm seeing the snake. And then I go and ask the rope, why did you show me the snake and why did you frighten me? Then the rope is going to say, what is the rope going to say? What snake are you talking about? There is no snake. Okay, but I saw the snake. So what I say snake and rope. Actually, there is no snake. There is only rope. There is a relationship. Even before this, let's see. A relation. How do we say there is a relationship? If a man is called a husband, if I say this is a husband, you will automatically, there is a presupposition that there is a wife. Otherwise, that person cannot be a husband. If I say wife, has to be a husband. So there is a relation. Man is only a man. But then he becomes a husband because of the wife. He becomes a father because there is a child. He becomes a brother because there is some brother. He becomes something because of something else. And that is what a relation is. What is a relation? I am Jaya only. But then somebody will say, she's my friend. So that other person has got, or somebody will say, she's my enemy. Somebody will say, she's, you know, my neighbor. She's my daughter. She's my mother, right? So this one person is having these different relations. Now, if we take snake and rope, is there a relation between the snake and the rope? I see the snake because of the rope. So what I say, of course there is a relation. If the rope was not there, I wouldn't have seen the snake. So there is a relation. But what is the rope saying? The rope is saying, how can there be a relation? There is no snake. How can there be a relation between... See, husband, we say because there is a wife. There is no wife. How you can call this man a husband? So if there is no snake, how can you say that there is a relation between me and the snake? I'm the rope, say. How can I say that there is no snake? So that's why this is called as a relationless relationship. These words are very important also in Vedanta. We have to understand what is the relation between God and this world. Why do we have to understand this now? Because what did he say? This sattva, rajas, tamas has come from me. Okay, then what did we say? Sattva, rajas, tamas, the interaction of this is the world. Right? There is a connection. I mean, you know, you understand. Bhagwan said, sattva, rajas, tamas has come from me. We said, yeah, when we look at the world, we see that world is nothing but an interaction of these three gunas. That means what? Means world has come from him only. Right? Now, what is the relationship between him and the world? Is there a relationship? Because he's saying it's come from me. See, when I say this child is born of me, then there is a relation. This child is mine. This book is mine, right? That way. So the question then arises, is there a relation between God and the world? Because he has said that this gunas have come from me, and we are saying that the world is nothing but a play of the gunas. Do you get it? Do you get it? Or is it getting too complicated? Very simple. Bhagawan said sattva, rajas, tamas has come from me. That is okay. Bhagawan said that. And we explained that. They are dependent. I have explained all that. Okay. Next. We are saying that the world. Does everybody agree? That also I explained. With Dhritra. If you're attached to material objects, even in modern day it applies. Then it is an expression of tamas. If you're very dynamic and active, what to do next, a to-do list, that is an expression of rajas, expression of knowledge, sattva. I've also explained to you that no action can come without the three gunas. Simple action that I'm speaking right now, the knowledge is coming from sattva. The actual talking is coming from rajas. The vocal cords, I need my body. I need the vocal cords. That is tamas. The body is tamas. The body is inert. But if I didn't have that inert vocal cord, would I have been able to speak? If I didn't have the knowledge in my head, would I have been able to speak? If I didn't know the language, would I have been able to speak? So without sattva being there, or without rajas, without any one of these three being there, would this action of speaking happen? This is just an example. You take anything that is happening in your life, if you only think and analyze, you will come to know that these three are there. I've always given you the example of cooking. You have to have the knowledge of the recipe. You have to have the material, which is inert. You know, you want to make rice, you have to have that grain, that rice grain, which is inert, which is tamas. And then you have to have the stove and the water and all to cook that rice, which is rajas. There can be nothing can happen in this world without the three gunas. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. You give a blouse for stitching. You need the cloth. You need the intelligent, the tailor master who knows how to stitch that blouse or top or whatever. And then he needs a sewing machine, doesn't he? Doesn't he have to sew it? Somebody has to sew it. Maybe he can tell somebody, but somebody. So rajas is there. So nothing can happen. Therefore, the world is nothing but these three gunas. That part has to be understood. So then the point comes, if sattva, rajas, tamas have come from him, the world has come from him, then is there a relationship between him and the world? That is now the question. So then let us take water and waves, ocean and waves. Okay. So the waves, a person is looking and he sees the waves and he says that there is a relation between the wave and the ocean, because of the ocean, the waves are there. Standing on the beach, he creates the person. I'm standing on the beach and I'm creating a relationship between the wave and the ocean, because it is because of the ocean that I see the waves. And then in the waves, I see a variety. There is tall and short and big and fat and thin and whatever waves I see. They're coming forward, they're going backwards, everything I see. Now I go to the ocean and I become the ocean, actually, and then I look at the wave. Am I going to look at that as a wave, or am I going to just look at it as water, as me only? As the ocean, what do I look at it as? I say, what wave? That is only water, and I am water, and wave is water. What is the relation? So from one side, there is no relation. But from the other side, there is a relation. And therefore, it is a relationless relationship between Bhagwan and the world. This point has to be understood, thought about. Okay? Means, I think that there is the world. Means what here? Means, yeah, people, when you see, yes, this has come from Bhagwan, but it is only a superimposition. The world is only a superimposition on the substratum. What there is only the substratum. I told you sat, asat, vivek. I told you earlier on also that buddhir buddhi matamasmi, the intelligence is that viveka shakti, that discrimination to understand the difference between sat and asat, then to understand that there is no asat, so there is only sat. When I say two things, see, for relation, two things have to be there. There cannot, what is the relation of me to me? No relation. But me to you, there is a relation. You're my friend, you're my student, you're my teacher, you're my son, you're my daughter, you're my husband, you're my mother, whatever. When there are two people, there is a relation. But once you come to know that the other person is there a relation between me and my reflection? What? There can be. Because the reflection is false. How can there be a relation between me and something that is not existing? So from the side of the ocean, it is only water. There is no wave. There is only water. From Bhagwan's side, it is only him. From the side of the rope, there is no snake. There is no snake. But from my side, I see the snake. Because I see snake and rope. Then I see this rope. First I see the snake, then I say, oh, I saw the snake on the rope. But rope will say there was never any snake. Right? Any questions? We'll talk a little bit more about this, but then of course the question comes, why do people suffer? Why did God create this world? But for now, we'll stop here. I think it's getting a bit heavy. Any questions? Any doubts?
Jayaji, can I ask a question?
Yeah, of course.
In one of the chapters, we have heard Bhagwan say that Sutre Manigana Iva.
So correct, same chapter. Seventh chapter, yeah.
Chapter, then, and the thread that is running through everything.
Correct.
So how is that connected with what you said now? That I'm in everything, but I'm in them, they are not in me.
Ah, so same thing now. I am in them means, see, if you, Sutre Manigana Iva, I told you the detailed explanation was in the essence. How is he the essence, right? The thread is holding everything. But you have to understand that this money is not something different from the thread. Remember I told you, See, the Dvaita school, that is what they pick up and they say that there is a thread. Bhagwan said there is a thread and he says there are these gems, pearls, whatever. And so there is a pearl which is different and there is a thread which is different. Yeah. Right? That's what, and they say there is Dvaita. So there is Bhagwan and there is me and I am the pearl and Bhagwan is running through me as life. Okay, fine. What we are saying, what Vedanta says or Advaita Vedanta says, like Nyaneshwar Maharaj has given the example of the thread which we get in the Hanuman temple. In Bombay we used to get it, I know. Mm-hmm. So there is a thread and the same thread is knotted.
Right.
And there is, okay. So when I am in them means the beads are, the knot is because of the thread. But can the thread can be there without the knot, na?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thread is there, then you knotted it. To make a knot, you need the thread. But to keep the thread as a thread, do you need the knot?
Yeah.
The knot, right? Mm-hmm. That's where people see, that's why you have to understand that to see this world, to see the snake, the rope is required. Mm-hmm. Mithya, see, this word mithya means you have to see something, but you have to understand that it does not have that reality. And what is the reality in Vedanta? That which does not change in the three periods of time. Mm-hmm. Right? So when I see the snake, it is not remaining. The minute my friend walks in and turns the light on, I see the rope. That means the snake disappeared. So the snake was mithya.
Yeah.
Okay. So now if you take the thread and this example, if you ask the thread that what is this knot, the thread is going to say it is thread only, na?
It's me. Yeah.
Ah, it's me only, na? Like you know, this is a, say this is a thread, and now I tie a knot here, right? So now you ask this part, thread, what is this knot? But what knot? It's me only, just twisted. I'm twisted and it's me only. So, but this one, this part can remain as is, doesn't need a knot. But if I have to make this knot, I do need the thread.
Yeah, yeah. So it's so the same thing.
Is in me. The knot is in the thread.
Right. So it's the same thing that he's meaning here as well, right?
Yeah.
There's only me. There's nothing else. There's only me.
Correct. That is the essence. That is the essence that is to be understood. But what happens is when he says this has come from me, then people think, oh, it has come from him. Then it is real. No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because he's saying that now these three gunas have proceeded from me. Know them to have proceeded from me. They've come from me. Yes. Yes. But in the ultimate analysis, they don't, that's why they don't affect me. The snake has come from the rope, but will the poison of the snake ever affect the rope? Gurudev used to say this. Snake has come from the rope, but it will the poison affect the rope? Is the rope afraid of the snake? That is all.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's why this chapter, see, and remember that this chapter we are starting, Tat Padam Shodhanam. Remember I told you 1 to 6 is Tvam Pada Shodhanam. This is Tat Pada Shodhanam. This is to discover what that self actually is. That's why this every verse is like deep. Like don't, that's why he said, don't think I'm the words. I'm because of which the words are heard. I'm because of which the words are spoken. Always, you know. So always going back. Subtler and subtler. Okay, any questions? All right. So next time we'll go to, I think after this, it will be a little bit easier. So far it was like the highest knowledge. Then it will be a little bit easier. We will quickly go over this verse next time as well, and then we'll proceed. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om. Hari Om, everybody. I'll see you next time, next Monday.